Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It's the Fanny Morning Show. Oh, the Fanny Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Fanny for life. Next guest, Chris Sims, former NFL QB, current analyst for PFT Live, Sunday Night Football, and Unbuttoned.
Let's get it together, NFLB.
I'm too pumped up about the text line. As I said, yeah. It's the Fanny Morning Show. Here's our guy, Chris Sims.
Very excited to be joined by our next guest. Great guy, great analyst, former NFL QB, now Sunday Night Football, PFT Live, Unbuttoned, you name it. It's Chris Sims. How we doing, pal?
Hi, I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me. How you been? It's been a while since we talked. Everything good in your world?
Everything is good except for life as a Seahawks fan and trying to kind of be genuinely interested in whether or not Drew Locke or Geno Smith is going to be your quarterback. Like, there's these weird moments where you'll be reading, like, training camp stuff and remember what times were like when, you know, you had a quarterback that you could just basically nail down 10 wins to. It's a different type of year. Let's just put it that way as a football fan for me.
Well, no doubt. You can't go on forever. You guys have had a really good run. It's been special what you've done in Seattle for sure. But yeah, your squad's an interesting franchise. There's no doubt about it. I feel like they're kind of stuck in between of, do we want to rebuild completely? Do we want to just tear everything down? What I had heard really is that there was a lot of sentiment in the organization to tear it all down. And you know, maybe that Pete Carroll was like, wait, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be here. I don't know if I want to start from scratch. And I think that's ultimately why they re-upped DK Metcalf, tried not to trade him. There's some things to like about the football team, and you guys always compete. I'm not saying playoffs, but I could see you guys being a pain in the butt with Geno Smith at quarterback. That's who I expect to be the guy ultimately.
Here's what I would say, and this is a universal, so even if you're not a football fan listening to this, is that generally when you have divided organizational philosophies and you decide to follow the 70-year-old on personnel issues, not the best idea. Like, listen,
well,
it's fine.
I hear you.
That's usually not the way I want to go with things. And you know what? This actually, maybe we start things here, which is with the Patriots. There's some reports out of their camp that after your former coach, Josh McDaniels, left, that they tore up the old offense, that they've gone completely nuclear with it, and that Mac Jones isn't having the greatest time with this. And it's the second year, and it's Bill Belichick, and everybody gives the, you know, Patriots nod of approval. But are you worried for Mac in year two under Judge and Patricia's, which is apparently what it's going to look like with this offense, that maybe, again, another aging coach, someone with a much better pedigree than Pete Carroll, no doubt about it, but maybe that they've done a little bit too much in one offseason with a quarterback that found a lot of success last year?
Well, I'm not going to say I'm worried yet. My antennas are up, certainly. I know it is a little odd. And listen, I think a lot of this is to be expected. When you lose a guy like Josh McDaniels, who is no question one of the top five offensive minds in football over the last 20 years, you know, there's going to be some bumps in the road, but I'm not going to hit the panic button. The first thing is, and I know there's a lot of reports about, oh, practice isn't as smooth and all that. That's the New England way. That's where they're a little different than the rest of football, too.
Yeah.
See, I think we could go back to the Tom Brady era and still see bad plays and some disjointed offense, but with everybody, it was Tom Brady, a quarterback, and we just saw, oh, it'll be good. They'll figure it out. This is what practice is for. But because it's a second-year quarterback and there's no Josh McDaniels there, it becomes a little bit more of a story. They are a team that doesn't script for success. And for those who don't know that, there's a lot of teams in training camp where, you know, the offensive coach goes, hey, defense, I want you to play this play against this. And I want you on play number 4 of 7-on-7, I want you to play this defense. And it's now he can call his plays that are best against that defense. New England's not that way. They're not into like going in and going, oh, our quarterback was 72 for 74 in practice today. They make it lifelike situations. They make it game-like situations, which, as we know, can be ugly at times. You don't always know what the defense is going to get. So there is that element up there. And, you know, ultimately, I will go back to something you said. I mean, Belichick, Belichick is a huge reason of Josh McDaniels and who he is. Josh will tell you, anybody up there, you know, that offense that McDaniels runs, a lot of those ideas were because of Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick would go, ooh, you know, when teams get in this formation, I don't like when they do this and this to my defense. So he was part of the you know, the architect of that offense with Brady and everything they've done there. I'm sure they're finding their way. Like I said, I'm not going to say I'm worried yet, but I'm certainly watching it from a distance with some antennas up, and we'll see how this goes and how they look in preseason game one.
Yeah, it's funny because you give all that benefit of the doubt. I think that I love what you said about the New England media, because I think we deal a lot with that here in Toronto, but more with the hockey team, is that
right.
You really have
right.
to read between the extremes of some of the reports. But yeah, you also just have Judge and Patricia, who are like the anti-Belichick in terms of guys that you have faith in around football from the last couple of years in terms of track record. And you go from a guy like Josh McDaniels to potentially those two guys, and you do wonder kind of what this is going to look like. And so you're actually a unique position to ask this question to, because I don't want to say you're higher on Josh McDaniels than other people are, but yeah, you think he's one of the five brightest minds in the game from the offensive side. He gets Devontae Adams now to pair with Carr. We mentioned you know, Russell Wilson's on the exit. He's heading to Denver, where there's a ton of weapons, even though that they've been dealing with some injuries early in camp. Like, they're loaded, that team, so far this year on that side of the ball. It's year three of Herbert, or it's Mahomes without Tyreek. Quarterback in the AFC, you're most curious to see this season.
Well, I guess it's Russell Wilson that's going to take the cake there. I am most curious to see that, you know, just because it's going to be the first time where I do think, you know, the team, the offense is going to be played through him. It's going to be, I think, more of a, you know, balanced or pass heavy offense, not the balanced attack that he's been a part of. Plus, he's been playing for a defensive head coach all these years, where it's always been a little bit like, oh, hey, we want to run the ball and chew up clock so my defense can be fresh and go play. And, hey, Russell, don't take any chances or be that aggressive, because our defense is good. And it's not always easy to play quarterback that way either. And I'm not saying Russell Wilson's perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I am saying he's damn good, and I'm excited to see him with, you know, an offense that I will say is, I think, going to be clearly the most creative he's been a part of in his career. And then, like you said, some weapons to go around where, you know, hey, DK Metcalf and Lockett are special. But I think, you know, with he's got a chance there in Denver with 3-4 guys that can be really good within that system. They have 2 pretty good running backs to go with that. So he's the guy, you know, I'm probably the most intrigued to see. Derek Carr's a machine. He's going to be good with Josh McDaniels. McDaniels learned from learned lessons from that first time around in Denver, where I was there with him and I saw it. And maybe he, you know, ruled with an iron fist too much. Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill, I don't give a damn. I don't give a damn. Patrick Mahomes is unbelievable. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and their offense will be awesome without Tyreek Hill. I don't doubt that one bit, and we know he's awesome. And Herbert, same thing. It's just the rest of the team's got to catch up to Herbert and play his level of football. He's a superstar. He's one of the 5 best quarterbacks in the game, and now they got to start playing defense and be able to run the ball, so the rest of the world can see that he's definitely one of the top 5 quarterbacks in the game. So that's where I guess I went with Wilson. It is intriguing with the new scenery around him.
Yeah, because they had the injury to Tim Patrick, right? But even still, I saw a video floating around. It was yesterday or the day before, of all of his different receivers kind of mocking him for his "What's up, Broncos country? Let's ride." You know that video that's been going viral.
Right.
So,
and
they're doing the video, I'm seeing all the different guys in it, and I'm going, "God, that guy's gonna be interesting." And wow, yeah, I wonder what KJ Hamler's gonna look like for him.
Exactly.
And there's so many guys that I went, holy crap, they're just incredibly deep, even after losing Fant in the trade and after losing Patrick to the injury. And so the one guy I want to focus in on there, and this is my thing today, is I want to have you on because this is such a buzzy season, right? Like, one bad practice changes the entire outlook of a narrative, right? Like, there's a throw where Daniel Jones, it's a throwaway. I think you may have even tweeted about it. It's like, there's a throwaway play at practice, and people are like, look at how inaccurate this guy is. It's like, oh my God. So that's the narrative, right, out of camp, is this guy can't throw this pass, and like every Giants fan I know is freaking out. So I want to have you on because, like, you actually know, and so trying to, you know, go between the buzz and the reality of the situation. But the Mahomes thing I think is curious, because to me it's not anything they're doing. It's that every day I open up my Instagram and I see a different Tua deep shot to Tyreek. And now I don't want to wait. Like, I think it's pretty clear and obvious which quarterback, you know, you'd rather have. Tyreek started this whole thing with he's got the stronger arm, but you're starting to see these things and you realize, boy, Tyreek just gave you so much room for error, right? Like, having a guy where you can just air it out to when you have a big arm like a Mahomes or a Tua is such a valuable commodity. And my bigger point of curiosity is, not are the Chiefs going to be great, not is Patrick Mahomes going to be great. I think that those things are established, but it's like, how much did that guy add to that offense? I think that's going to be intriguing. Seeing him with the Dolphins makes me think more about the Chiefs than it does make me excited about the Dolphins' future, if that makes sense.
Well, sure. And, you know, I don't think he's going to get the same kind of catches he got in Kansas City either. I mean, you know, again, the arm is not even in the same stratosphere as Patrick Mahomes as far as Tua. I mean, that's something to watch out for. You know, they're going to have an offense that you've seen a little bit more like Jimmy Garoppolo in San Francisco. Screen here, quick throw over the middle, quick throw out on the edge, you know, real creative run game, play action, bootlegs, all that type of stuff. Mahomes, you know, first off, his record and performance without Tyreek Hill on the field pretty much speaks to it. I mean, they don't miss Tyreek Hill when he's not out there. They win, and they throw for 300 yards even when he's not there. Now, I'm not trying to, you know, or put down Tyreek Hill, because he is really special. But I think there's ways into where, hey, Marquez Valdes-Scantling runs 4-3 flat. Now, you still got to defend him when he goes down the middle of the field flying, and Patrick Mahomes could throw it 70 yards down the field. I think in a lot of ways, it can make their offense a little bit more dangerous in the fact that we don't know who they're always trying to attack us with now anymore. We knew it was just Hill and Kelce. Now it's like, wait, is it Valdes-Scantling? Is it Juju Smith-Schuster? Is it Mecole Hardman? Is it Travis Kelce? I'm forgetting probably one other name in there that's off the top of my head. So I think you could, the execution by committee could be more of an issue for defenses, to where they were always going, oh, wait, Hill's here. Oh, this is what they're going to try to do. Oh, Hill's there. Oh, this is what they're going to try to do. I don't think you're going to be able to tell exactly what's going to be done there. And between that, Andy Reid, his creativity, I guess that's where, you know, I don't worry about it as much. Now, the Daniel Jones thing is ridiculous. It's just people jumping on a narrative on a guy that everybody likes to kick when they're down. I mean, that's just the way we are with social media, especially here in America. I mean, it's just like, hey, he's down. Let's kill him. Let's kick him, and let's eviscerate him and make him feel like a piece of trash. And it's wrong, and the people that put these things out on Twitter are wrong. You know, first off, if Daniel Jones threw that ball on target, and I challenge anybody to go out there and watch Twitter, it's a pick six for 80-yard touchdown. He deliberately threw that ball there. You know, it was a play where he looks to his left. He's been taught to look to your left. If that guy's not open against this coverage, the guy on the right side should be open against this coverage if he runs the route correctly and does what he's supposed to do. Watch the video again. You'll see Kenny Galladay slip and lose his footing coming out of the break. He doesn't really explode out of the break. So as Daniel Jones is looking to his left, he's going, wait, coach told me to look to my left. That guy's not open. And now within rhythm and timing, all those things you hear with a quarterback, he's going to his second read. And as he's pulling the trigger for that, because it should be there against that coverage, he starts to evaluate, oh, wait, I'm in my throwing motion. Kenny Galladay didn't get out of his break, and that guy's close. So he threw the ball in an area where maybe my guy can get it if he makes a great catch. If not, it's second down, and we're in field goal range. You know, so Giant fans want it both ways there a little bit. Oh, we want plays, but, I mean, you know, they complain about his turnovers. Well, you want him to try to fit that one in so we get no points there? That was the proper quarterback play. Daniel Jones is one of my least concerns with the New York Giants. I mean, the least. He's one of the better players on their football team. He's smart, and this is why they're sticking with him and trying to give him a chance. They haven't given him a fair shot. He's smart. He's big. He's a good thrower of the football. He's one of the best running quarterbacks in all of football. And then he's been behind, and this is where I try to correct people. He's been behind not a bad offensive line. It's the worst offensive line in football, and it's not even close the last two or three years. It's not even close. They were almost a joke up front when teams would play them. So it's hard to know exactly how good he is or can be when you can see anybody you talk to would tell you Saquon Barkley is one of the most physically gifted people in football. Well, you know why he hasn't done anything? Let me think about that. doesn't matter when no one blocks. So we'll see where it goes. I am a little bit of a defender of Daniel Jones. Of course, the Giants are my favorite team, but I would expect things to turn around in the right direction this year with finally a better O-line, and I think the best offensive coach he's had in his career to this point, and some weapons around him. So we'll see where it goes. But I think the Giants recognize a lot of things and traits that they like for a franchise quarterback and realize they haven't given him a fair shot. And I think that's why, you know, they're going to do their due diligence and let this play out here for one more year.
I don't think he's Josh Allen, but I would remind fans of the Giants what people thought of Josh Allen before that last year, and that he is with Daboll, a guy that I'm with you on the physical traits and the gifts of Daniel Jones. Like, I think he'll be able to run. Having a healthy Saquon Barkley, I think, is going to be huge. Whether or not he stays healthy, that's another question. But at least all the reports are right now that the offensive line looks improved. Like you said, low bar, but looks improved.
Right.
They've got a healthy Saquon Barkley. They've invested a ton in the weapons for this guy. Now they have a guy with a real track record as a play caller who has a history with guys with Daniel Jones' skill set. I don't know. I'd be more encouraged about things and, less focused on throwaways and training camp fights. And they are a fun team to mean, though. Like, that's a great picture, the drag-away picture. I was like, that's a...
I know it is. I know. Yeah. I understand. And some of it is very creative. But, you know, I think you said it right. And to me, the biggest thing Daniel Jones has to fix about his football game is just standing there like the Statue of Liberty in the middle of the pocket at times. Like you just said, he's a good athlete. He can run. He needs to learn to play. The NFL right now, unless you're Tom Brady or have one of the best offensive lines in football around you to where you don't have to, the biggest plays and some of the best plays are made by scrambling and buying time. And sometimes he just sits there and, wait, coach told me to go through the reads, and I'm doing that in the pocket. Sometimes you just got to go, hey, one's not open. Hey, let me look at two. Oh, it's getting a little tight in here. Let me get out. I'm fast. Let me separate myself from the pass rush. Now I can set up and maybe move some people in coverage, compromise them that way, and then throw the ball. And that's what you see the great ones doing right now. I mean, whether you talk about Burrow, Mahomes, you know, Aaron Rodgers in his prime, Josh Allen, who you just brought up, they're masters at that. They're great scramblers to buy time and really stress the defense. And I think he's just got to get a little bit more of a feel for that, and I'm hopeful he can.
Okay, so training camp buzz, and then let's just stay in the NFC East. How much stock are you putting into Wentz's struggles with accuracy so far? And again, this is something like now that their coach has even addressed.
Well, I mean, Wentz has gone through little issues like this. You know, Wentz is, he's got a little bit of a funky throwing motion where he really, you know, cocks his elbow up. And I think that's why he's had elbow issues, too, throughout his career a little bit. There's so much that goes on to that to where, I don't always love the mechanics of Carson Wentz when it comes to pure throwing and playing the position. I'm not going to say I'm overly concerned as of yet. You know, again, it's one of those where I'd like to see it a little first before I jump to those conclusions. But when you do hear the coaches kind of echoing it a little bit, it's obviously a little bit of an issue there that he's missed some throws where they go, damn, you know, he's supposed to hit that one. We're not supposed to miss that. Now he's learning a new offense. He's, you know, around some new players, certainly. But yeah, Wentz is one of those guys where you go, wow, there's tremendous talent there. Why can't we put it together? Why is it 1 year great and the next year he's thrown into triple coverage and trying to do too much? He obviously has not the best leadership skills. I mean, not obviously. We know that. I know that. Everybody knows that in football. I've never seen a team that, you know, almost made the playoffs and went 27-7 and couldn't wait to get the guy out of the damn building. And like you saw in Indianapolis. And I think that's because Irsay and some of the other people in that building just believed he wasn't a good leader. He wasn't a guy that could relate to players on the field. And that's the same things you heard in Philadelphia. You know, he insulates himself a little too much, in my opinion. Like, when he was in Philadelphia at the end, he had no idea Doc Rivers was the new head coach of the 76ers. Hey, we don't want to listen to noise, but let's not be clueless about what's going on in the world around you and some of the narratives that are around you. You know, the smart quarterbacks, when they hear some of the narratives around them, they go, oh, wait, I'm going to address that, and then I'm going to prove them wrong on the football field, and that narrative will go away. And for him sometimes, yes, I don't really understand the man sometimes, and I'll be interested to see how that all works out in Washington.
You know, it's really interesting you say that, because that was almost the same thing Donovan McNabb told me when I talked to him during Wentz's good times in Philadelphia, like when things were going well, that it was already being flagged by people around the organization, people in the know, that he needed to ingratiate himself a little bit better with, his teammates, especially
being
the
more
city,
accountable.
Whatever. It really did seem like there was always a buffer between Wentz and the team. And I don't know how much that hurt him with the Super Bowl year and him not having been a part of it, but also being kind of like pegged as the golden child even after they won. But it certainly manifested into something. It grew. And I think that, it's just something that he's not been able to shake throughout his career. So I couldn't help you but hear you say prime Aaron Rodgers. Now, their offensive line, like we're talking about stock up, stock down from a training camp buzz standpoint, their offensive line is getting raked over the coals. He lost Adams. He lost Scantling. He's doing a lot of weird media, and like that's Aaron Rodgers, but it's taking on a whole new thing, I think, this offseason. Like, we've always had weird Aaron Rodgers offseason reports, whether it's been like the family stuff, whatever. But now there's the weird stuff. Like, I personally don't give a crap what he does psychedelics. I endorse it, in fact. But there just seems to be a lot of noise around Aaron Rodgers right now, and all the things around the football team don't seem to be very positive. Where are you at with just kind of like the Packers heading into this season and him and his future with this team?
Yeah, well, listen, I appreciate Aaron Rodgers for, his honesty in a lot of times. And I've actually been, I'm not done with it yet, but watch this podcast where he talks about the ayahuasca and all of that. And, again, it has helped people. There's real tangible evidence that that's helped people. And he certainly 100%. Seems to be one that believes it. And I'm not going to fight against that at all. I really always appreciate his honesty. I do. I appreciate the fact that he goes on with, Big Cat and talks to him in an interview where Big Cat usually kills him on his podcast.
Murdered him the entire time.
Yeah, exactly. So I really do. I don't think you're going to see a lot of star quarterbacks that would put themselves in that position. He's a little different a guy, certainly, and you got to put yourself in his shoes. For my money, in their prime, nobody was a better quarterback in the history of football than Aaron Rodgers. You take his 8-10 best years. Him, Peyton Manning, I don't think anybody beats it. I know Brady's the GOAT, but Brady's just the GOAT because of accomplishments, and I think it gets overblown at times. I understand that. But I don't think you could put him on the field in the prime against Aaron Rodgers. So Rodgers always has to hear that. You're not as good as Brady. You're not as good as Brady. And he's probably like, wait, what do you mean? I make better decisions better. I make more plays better. I scramble better. I don't throw as many interceptions better. But – oh, that's right. I don't win Super Bowls. And that's a team thing, and that frustrates me. I don't like that narrative all the time. People need to start saying Phil Simms is better than Dan Marino. That's what I would say. Because Phil won a Super Bowl and Dan Marino didn't, so he must be better. And that's not true. We know that. So I just don't always love that. It's a weird team, and I think, he said in this podcast when I was watching last night, he gives zero Fs anymore what people think about him. He's been carrying that team and – for the most part, below average defenses for the most part of his career, not always great weapons. It's always on, hey, they're a Super Bowl contender this year. And I'm always like, well, why? Just because he's a quarterback? I was one to say in all year, there's no way they'll go to the Super Bowl last year. I never thought that would be the case. So the one thing I give a silver lining to, and sorry for the long answer here, is their defense – I do think can be dominant. I'm not surprised to hear, without Bakhtiari in there and some guys maybe not at full strength quite yet, that they're getting run over a little bit. Preston Smith, Rashawn Gary, Kenny Clark, the two kids they drafted from Georgia, especially the Devontae Wyatt defensive tackle, who I thought was really a top 10 pick but had off-the-field issues, and that's why he fell. I'm not shocked to hear that group's causing some issues for that offense. So they might play a different brand of football this year where they might not be as sexy on offense. It might be a little bit more ball control, play defense. Oh, wait, here's, play action pass, Christian Watson who runs 4-3 over the top. Boom, we hit him for a 70-yard gain. I don't expect the same stats. The division's not that great. I still think they win the division. But I don't sit here right now and look at Green Bay to be a Super Bowl team, in my opinion. I don't look at their roster and think they're in the same class as Tampa Bay or the San Francisco 49ers. Now, the 49ers have the quarterback question. We know that. or, you know, really even the Rams from that standpoint as far as playmakers and difference makers on a down-to-down basis.
Well, to relate him to Brady a little bit more, I just wonder if this is going to be the Packers version of Brady's final season in New England, where we learned, hey, Tom is not good enough anymore to elevate a mediocre football team and a mediocre offense. And then, you know, you could still put him in Tampa Bay where he refocuses and you put the best offensive line in football and multiple weapons and a different coaching staff, and Byron Leftwich and all this stuff around him. And yeah, of course he's still able to win a Super Bowl in that circumstance. But Rodgers just, like, again, the media stuff that I'm alluding to is not so much that he is doing it, because I think it's fun too. I watched that same podcast. I had a blast watching it. I'd love when athletes are honest. I wish we had more of it. I guess it's more of what you said, where he's like, he doesn't give the F's anymore. And I go, this to me seems like a guy who has been focused on things like trying to be and I think we overstate this stuff at times with media, where it's like a guy has an interest outside of just sports, especially football, and we freak out. But I think his is a little different, where it looks a little beyond that, where if I'm his teammate, I have to wonder, hey, are you all in? Like, are you going to be there when everything's down this year? Are you going to kind of just throw us under the bus and say, well, this isn't good enough, and I don't really care about it, I don't really be a part of it, I'm already thinking about greener pastures? Like, I saw the report that part of the Adams trade was that there was still uncertainty around Rodgers. And I think that that's a tough place to be. And, like, as a Seahawks fan from last season with the Russell Wilson thing, I think you saw a little bit of that, where a team goes, are you on this team? Because you're our leader. You're our face. You're the reason that the Packers fans believe they can win every Sunday. And if you're not there, I don't know how everybody else can follow. That's the part that would worry me if I'm a Packers fan.
I hear you. I hear that totally all the way. And, yes, I mean, I understand Davante Adams. I mean, I don't think this will be the last year for Aaron Rodgers, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's, you know, second to last. You know, I don't think he's a guy that's going to continue to, like, you know, he plays a different brand of football. It's a little riskier game of football compared to Tom Brady. Even though at his age, he's still a scrambler, can move around the pocket and do that. And he's taken more hits in his career because of that. And I don't think he could last quite as long either. But, yeah, I'm interested to see exactly what you're talking about as well. There also is the flip side of it that maybe goes, maybe this guy's so crazy and been putting so much pressure on himself. You know, and he does allude to this in the podcast that he's been tormenting himself and maybe, you know, made life harder on himself. And maybe finally he's found the balance of, like, wait, you know, I can still be psycho and prepare, but I don't need to be, like, ultra psycho to where it bogs down my brain or, you know, gives me other issues that way. But they're definitely, listen, I'm with you there. That's something to watch for. And we'll see. They got to find somebody that's, you know, going to show up on that offensive side of the ball and be a really go-to weapon. Alan Lazard, I really like him. You know, he's a good number two, but he's not a superstar receiver, and that's where we need to see Christian Watson, who I love coming out in the draft. I'm hopeful that he can make some noise for that offense.
Hey, dude, I kept you way too long. I lost track of time. This was very, very fun.
I don't care.
I'm very appreciative of, you coming on, you doing this. And again, Chris Sims, PFT Live, Sunday Night Football, Unbuttoned, all of it's great. We love following. Again, social media is great too. Chris, we'll be following you all camp. Thanks so much for making the time, buddy.
Oh, thank you, buddy. Good to talk to you, and I'll talk to you soon.
Do you believe in ghosts? We're back on the Fan Morning Show, the Fanny Morning Show's Sportsnet 590 Fan. That was Chris Sims. Awesome. Man, football season right around the corner. Super fired up. Great interview, JD. That just leads us straight into something to chew on. That's brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Yum, yum, yum. Do you believe in ghosts? Because
no,
there's something fishy about this story. Yandy Diaz and the Tampa Bay Rays are headed to Milwaukee. Yandy Diaz.
I was like, hey, do you believe in ghosts? And this, Yandy Diaz. I'm like, okay.
Yandy Diaz believes in ghosts.
I like this start.
So,
yeah, okay. What's up,
Yandy? They're headed to Milwaukee, and there's a famous hotel, the Pfizer Hotel. Reputation for being haunted. So he is actually going to, he requested to stay in a room outside of the haunted wing of the hotel in a new section because he believes that there are ghosts.
This is an all-time L. That's a huge L. You're not going to stay with the squad because you're afraid of ghosts. I think that if you're afraid of ghosts, if ghosts are real, right? If there actually are ghosts,
that's
which I want to be very clear, There are not. There's no ghosts. I think the dumbest thing ever is those shows where they go
ghost hunters, and yeah, they have those little machines, and it's like,
it's the night vision, and they go, "What was that?"
But they get you, like, nothing. You're like, "I saw that too." What was that thing moving?
They get you. They get you. They don't get me. Yeah, they get rubes, suckers, saps, for sure. They get you guys. They never have once gotten me. I've never watched Ghost Hunters, and I've never seen a clip
it's
of
like
one.
It's like the music, and it's the creepy night vision.
Yeah,
and
it's a, yeah, it's.
But it, his anyway. Team played a bunch of pranks on him.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what the point I was going to make is that if ghosts were real and you were so afraid of them that you were staying in another hotel – you don't think that that ghost would hear?
Oh, he knows your prey.
That they would be like in the hotel and they would go, "Yandy's not here. He's so afraid of ghosts. Ha ha ha." And then they'd be like, "Where's he staying?" And that what? So the ghost rules are very interesting to me. It's like, so a ghost has to stay in the house.
He can travel to the other wing of the hotel, I think.
Yeah, like, come on.
He's got a pass card.
Anyway, if you're a fan of the Toronto Blue Jays, next time Yandy Diaz is in town and you have signs, like, there better be some dudes.
Boo.
There better be some people who show up in Ghostbuster costume for Yandy Diaz. Some people who dress up like ghosts, throw the sheets on, and start holding onto the chains and start doing, ooh, and scare. Because Yandy Diaz is, again, this is a really bad look. This is a really tough
look. Wait till
the. You're so afraid that you stay in a different hotel. That's childish. That's childish.
Wait till the Rogers Center renovations happen and the fans are closer to the field. And maybe the Rogers Center renovations actually spark some ghosts to be angry that, like, their home is being torn apart. And, like, the construction over the next 6 to 8 months just, like, stirs them up.
Yes.
There's something there.
Now you're onto it. What we really need is a ghost story at the Rogers Center that we got to start where spooky things have been happening at the Rogers Center. Guys from out of town, they've been showing up, and then all of a sudden, they never left to the same. A part of them died in Toronto. Something happened. Oh, the hotel that's attached.
The hotel that's attached to the Rogers Center it's prime because that's where they live.
We gotta have a story about. I'm gonna get in trouble for this. We gotta have a story about a murder at that hotel.
JD.
What are you saying? No, I'm going to dial it back. I'm going to dial it back because the next thing I was going to say is too far. So I know there's families listening to this show.
Yeah, someone's driving their kid to camp.
Yeah, I know. And let's just say that the thing I was thinking about involved that group that you just said. All right? Because those are always the spookiest ones. The spookiest ones are always with kids. All right.
Oh my God! Junior Day Sundays just took a dark turn.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Junior Day Sunday. Exactly.
No one's gonna
let that be a lesson to you. One day on a Junior Day Sunday, maybe something happened. You know, kind of a spooky story. And then Yandy Diaz comes here, and people fill him in on this, and he's all spooked, and he can't hit, and he doesn't want to even play here. This is what God. This is why did we think about this before? How has this not been
a thing? This is the best Something to Chew On we've ever had.
This is truly the best Something to Chew On. Something to Chew On brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Should we make up more ghost stories to spook the superstitious players who won't stay in hotels because they heard a spooky ghost live there? Oh my God. I don't know how I would react to one of my friends coming up to me and be like, "Hey, we planned this trip. We're going to stay at this hotel." And he'd be like, "Do you know that's a haunted hotel?" I'd be like, "What? What are you joking right now?" He's like, "I'm not staying there. I don't know. I don't know what the friendship would be like from that point forward, but it's definitely not the same. It wouldn't be the same anymore. I couldn't talk to that person sincerely ever again. Like, what
do you think? There's paranormal things that happen, or like straight up, the world is just us, and there's nothing. There's no afterlife. There's no spirits.
Well, all right. Now it's just.
Are you getting too deep?
I think that you can believe that there's more beyond us, but not that ghosts around here, like
Casper. No.
Yeah, exactly. Do I think that there's potential for? I don't. This is getting way too deep, but do I think that there's something greater than us? probably. Like,
there's nothing greater than you, JD.
Thank you. I completely agree. Like, that's the best take you've ever had. But I don't believe in ghosts. I don't believe in psychics. I think, honestly, you know how many dates I've gone on where a girl's been like, and you know what is cool is astrology and my psychic. And you know how many girls always say, oh, I know psychics are fake, but this psychic knew this one thing. And I go, oh, okay.
Like a medium. How they can,
that suck.
Yeah,
they that can did talk suck. To the other side or something.
No. Ghosts, psychics, mediums, astrology, all in the bucket of crap, lies.
Another thing I'm going to do for your birthday is we're going to go to a fortune teller or get your palm read.
I would go because guess what? I think it's funny. I think that's funny. But I cannot believe people actually sit down with psychics and go, all right, this is... this is going to be a big day. Or someone will go to a hotel and go, all right, like this is the ghost hotel. Something might happen here. Okay. What happened? You know, these haunted hotels, what's ever happened? Nothing.
I would like people, before we take a break and during the break, to text in what your ghost story would be for to get Yandy Diaz to not want to come play at the Rogers Center. Pitch us your best ghost story.
The darker the better in the text line or in the
just
DMs.
Don't involve kids, okay.
I didn't say that.
They might not get read on air, but I'll read them to JD.
Read them to me.
Okay, that's after the break. It's the Ghost Hour on the Fanny Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Woo!
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Show Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's Wacky Wednesday. It's spooky hour. JD and I acquiring your ghost stories in the text line. Pardon?
I was going to say, like, I just didn't know if you could hear me or not.
I couldn't hear you. I think you were muted, bud.
Austin's like talking to the mic. Yeah, this mic that's in front of me. I'm talking to the mic.
You were talking, but you were.
Yeah.
I couldn't hear you. Maybe there was a ghost.
Yeah, maybe there was a ghost.
A ghost
all right.
Your
you said you
out.
got some ghost stories. All right, like.
Yeah, we got some for. So the background is the ghost stories Rogers Center related.
You know, Austin, I said you're having a good day, and then you said talking to the mic to me, and now I hate your guts. Like, you know, like I how dare you? All right, like all I've ever done for the last 10 years is talking to a mic. All right, and now it's over. Austin's good day done. It's over. Austin,
poor kid.
He was pitching a perfect game. He was doing good. He was killing the drops. Everything was on point. And then he said, talking to the mic to me. And now just our relationship is fractured forever. We'll never
that
recover
sucked.
From this. That did suck. That sucked so bad. All right. Give me some ghost stories.
Randy in Newmarket says, ghost story. The reason we have Junior J's Day is to appease the ghosts of the children that disappeared during the construction of the Rogers Center. Without this, they haunt the halls of the hotel.
Yeah. Every Junior J's Day, one's got to go. You know, like one kid's got to go. Every Junior J's Saturday. Oh, my God. Randy, that's a good one, Randy. That was a good one. Nice one, Randy.
Randy's in the lead. Listen. Okay. Tell Diaz that the Rogers Center third base bag is haunted by the ghost of Brett Laurie's potential to be a good baseball player.
That's pretty clever, but
it's not going to scare him away.
No, but here's the thing. I still believe, you know, he's still got time, all right?
Yeah.
I still believe in Brett Laurie.
He won the hearts of every, middle-aged woman, let me tell you that.
Those first couple Brett Laurie appearances are among the greatest baseball games I've ever been to. Like, Brett Laurie lit the city on fire. And he doesn't get enough credit for being one of the original hashtag rise and grind bros on Twitter. Like, Brett Laurie.
He's probably a crypto bro now, you think?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Brett Laurie's down bad. He's with me in the, we put too much money into this accounts. Yeah. Brett Laurie is, I hope it's not all in crypto, bro. What's next?
Ian from Cambridge. What about that the Rogers Center is built on an old graveyard? That's how a lot of these haunted house stories start.
Yeah, listen, that's a classic. That's tried, tested, and true. The thing is like, the reason I like the Junior Jays one is that we're going into the best avenues, which is one, kids are the spookiest ones. Kids are always the spookiest ghosts. That's always the one. There's a reason why The Ring is the scariest movie that's ever existed. And I love horror movies. The Ring is the scariest one. Like, this is the only one where... Do you know when I watched The Ring, that when it was over, I swear to God, the TV did the static thing?
That's not true.
No, I'm dead serious.
And you don't believe in ghosts? That was real.
I'm dead serious. I know, but it was... Well, yeah, I cannot believe in ghosts and have something spooky happen and get a little scared.
How did it happen then?
But that jump cut scene in The Ring, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. The first one where she says, I saw her face. And then you're like at the funeral and you're just chilling and it's like out in the birds and everything's fine. And then all of a sudden it cuts to the person in the closet. That's the hardest I've ever jumped in any movie. Confession time was the hardest I ever jumped. No question about it. Like a factor of 10 million. Every other horror movie I just love. Like I love horror movies. I could do top 10 horror movies any day of the week. It's one of my favorite genres. I say all the time, comedy and horror, if you make them bad, they're trash. If you make them elite, it's the best movies that you can have. Horror, top tier. That's a good one. I like the Junior Jays one. I like the Brett Laurie one. Graveyard, it's like, yeah. Yandy Diaz, although he's probably pretty gullible. So, yeah, whatever. Maybe this is the move, is to be like, here's 20
Simplicity
stories.
Simplicity is best.
Here's 20 stories, Yandy. Pick which one you think is real. One of them is. Actually, this is good, too. We could be like, what are the odds that all of these are lies? And he would be like, that's true.
No, two truths and a lie, or like two lies and a truth this time. He's going to pick one. Okay, Allison in Toronto. The Jays were haunted by the ghost of Brunette Odour last night.
That sucked. Yeah.
That guy must be like top five... hated athletes from the Toronto market, you think?
Yeah, for sure. Except for, here's the thing. I have a hot take with Brunette Odour. I kind of like him because he punched Jose Bautista in the face, and I thought, wow, you know, way to go.
That's what you thought?
100%. If you were a Rangers fan, you know how sweet that would be? Honestly, like, I would rather have the bat flip. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. But my hot take is that being a Rangers fan and having Brunette Odour punch Jose Bautista in the face is closer to the bat flip than people realize in terms of iconic moments. That's awesome. So awesome that he did that. And then the worst part was Bautista was like, he didn't even knock me out. It's like, yeah, dude, it's one punch, but you clearly would have lost. You were clearly shook up and you needed to be saved. And there's some video that basically shows you needed to get propped up. I can't stand Brunette Odour, right? Like, there's so many guys on those Rangers teams that I'll just hate for the rest of my life. Sports hate for the rest of my life. But that was a cool moment for sports fans. It's like, imagine Jose Bautista was on another team. This is what I always tell people. It's like, imagine Jose Bautista was a Yankee. How much Jays fans would have hated his guts.
It's nice when it's on your team and you're
exactly,
like,
hey, no problem. Exactly. He's our guy, but I think we can at least all acknowledge that he was a punchable guy. Like, he was definitely somebody a lot of baseball players would have thought over the course of his career, like, oh man, it'd be sweet to punch that guy in the face. And Brunette Odour did it. He stepped up and he delivered it. And yeah, I kind of respect it.
That bomb he hit last night too,
it was huge. And he pimped it.
Did he ever.
I know, and I hated it, and it made me feel sick, and I thought, are you kidding? This guy, like, I can't stand him. I cannot stand Brunette Odour.
Who's higher than him on your list?
You know what's crazy is that Goran Dragic will always have a special place in my heart for hate, and it was before he turned his back on the Raptors. And that's why it's like, I'm glad Goran Dragic treated the Raptors like trash. Because I always hated Goran Dragic. I hated that he was a flopper. I hated that he was basically Miami's version to Kyle Lowry Light. Where he was their, like, culture guy, their respected guy, their gamer, the underrated, he doesn't fill the stat sheet. But if you remember, he went after DeRozan one time. They just had some battles with Goran Dragic, and he was just always a rat to the Raptors. And that's why when they got him and some of the Raptors fans were going, he's going to be a fan favorite, I was very disappointed with certain sections of the fan base that thought. So, Dragic is one.
Hockey.
Oh, hockey. Marchand? There's so many. Again, I kind of like Marchand.
Yeah, you like that type of player.
I like the Rats. I know like I do. I like the Rats. I love.
I can't think of
Rats.
Like a singular moment that like it's just been like a career of him putting the dagger in Leafs fans.
Well,
is there
the guy,
a specific yeah, moment though?
No. The guy that I will always hate, and this shows my age, but Alfie.
Oh, like, okay.
Oh, yeah. I hate Alfie.
I was kind of thinking current players, but yeah, you go back.
I went as him for Halloween one time, and I wore, I wore like a clown outfit, and I bought an Alfie jersey and turned the C into cupless. And,
do you have photos of that?
Yeah, definitely. I'm very drunk, and the makeup is very runny. I was drinking wine.
Why are you wearing makeup?
Because I was a clown. I was Alfie. He's
like
a clown.
He went with the like actual...
Yeah, I was Alfredson, and it was a clown. And I when Alf, one of the maddest times I've ever been was when Alfie faked through the stick, like mocking Sundin. And I went, "How dare you, sir? How dare you? I don't think he should be in the Hall of Fame for just that. Like he did that out of the Hall. He's not. He should have never gotten the Hall of Fame, anyways. But yeah, that alone should have been enough to keep Alfie out. I hated Chris Neal a lot. But Alfie, I hated Chris Neal so much that I remember he got offered to the show one time.
Clearly hated the Ottawa Senators.
For sure I did. For sure I did.
And their transit system. And their downtown core.
Yeah.
And their old arena.
I love Ottawa. I love Ottawa. I hate the Sens. But now I kind of like the Sens because I'm old and I want the rivalry to come back and I want it to mean something.
Speaking of Sens.
Yeah.
But
Alfie's my all-time hated hockey player. I would say Rougned Odor. Mm-hmm. Brett Gardner is my number one most hated baseball player. I just have always hated Brett Gardner. I really hate his guts. I hated Dustin Pedroia, too. So those two guys at the top of the list. Rougned Odor is in there. Goran Dragic, number one with a bullet with NBA. No question. And Alfie for hockey. And football, Tom Brady. Yeah. That's my list. That's my Mount Rushmore of athletes I hate. There you go.
Well, maybe I'll make one for our next A-list. But you said Ottawa Senators. Speaking of Ottawa Senators, I have former Ottawa Senator, current Toronto Maple Leaf, Victor Mete on the A-list hour.
Make him say sorry for playing for those teams. say you're sorry, Victor. Apologize to everybody that if you want to play here. That's all I have to say to you today, all right? That's my
you'll
question.
You'll have to tune in and see if I do.
Say JD's first question. Are you sorry for the things you've done in your past? And just leave it like that and see what he says. Yeah, see what he says.
All right, let's take a break. We're not going to ask Caleb Joseph about ghost stories, I don't think.
Absolutely we are. What are you talking about? That's the number one question.
Keep it on. That's Caleb Joseph. He's next, former Blue Jays catcher and our Sportsnet analyst. It's the Fan Morning Show. Ooh, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.